Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
My all-seeing eye can't really know where you're sitting right this moment. You could be in a car on the expressway, looking at the cars next to you, wondering if you'll get shot. You could be on the slopes of a mountain in Transylvania, home of Vlad Dracula. Yes, we have listeners in Romania. But chances are you're a flatlander like me, and you're looking at a bleak, flat landscape in winter. Or you could be on the edge of the Grand Canyon. Beautiful vistas, beautiful sunsets, beautiful sky. Have you ever seen Thelma and Louise and that beautiful Thunderbird going off the cliff into legend? No? Yeah, I skipped it too. Even though apparently there's some fly fishing in it. And I skipped it for the same reason I skipped the Titanic and every movie where the dog dies. It's going to make me sad. I don't want to see the dog die. I don't want to see the kids drown in Titanic. And I don't want to see a 66 turquoise Thunderbird being killed. That's just too much for me. But our guest today, Tom Bevan, co-founder, president of Real Clear Politics, has seen it. Even though he hasn't seen Preston Sturges' The Great McGinty, and he doesn't know what he's missing. But if you've read my column Sunday at johncassnews.com, you know Bevan has seen Thelma and Louise. But there's a twist. He thinks Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer are in that car, driving off the cliff, driving the Republic and the Democratic Party right off the cliff. Hey, Tom, thanks for the headline, bro. Also here is Jeff Carlin, a rational man of science, master baker, man of reason, master of sound, and executive producer at WGN Radio, and my friend. And if you like what you hear here, well, Jeff has made it so. And if you really, really like Jeff, and you run your own business, you might want to advertise here on the Chicago Way. So he finally gets paid. And if you're interested in sponsoring portions of the podcast, just email me. Email to john@johncassnews.com and type sponsorship into the subject line. And me, well, with the voice of the nightingale, I'm John Cass, husband, father, cook and butcher son, soup maker, and columnist at johncassnews.com. More and more of you are subscribing every day. Thank you. And for the rest of you, come join us on this great adventure. So where are you? With the president screaming and driving off that cliff, calling all those who disagree with him racists, segregationists, and domestic enemies? Hey, Joe, how can you unify the nation like you promised a year ago, while you're calling for tens of millions of witches to be burned? You're with Tom Bevan and Jeff Carlin and me on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
Okay, then, listen. Let's not get caught. What are you talking about? Let's keep going. What do you mean? Go!
Hey! Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
And welcome. This is John Cass on the Chicago Way. With us is Tom Bevan of Real Clear Politics, a man who I was just off mic telling him that he should watch The Great McGinty. A movie.
Is that something my kids can watch with me, John?
But there must be some way, some solution of mutual satisfaction. I don't know how to talk to a mayor, but if I could only persuade you, then
you can't persuade me, Mr. Maxwell, because it's entirely out of my hands. But I'll tell you what I'll do. Just for old time's sake, I'll send the chairman of the bus committee up, and if you can persuade him, it's all right with me.
Is he difficult to persuade?
Well, he probably ain't impossible. Glad to see you looking so well.
But Mr. Mayor, can't we
drop in again some afternoon? We'll go to a ball game. You like baseball, don't you?
Well, I'm not a fan by any means.
You know, that's where you fellas make your biggest mistake.
Yeah.
You worry too much about business and contracts and the flaws in them and things like that. Get out in the open. Fill your lungs with fresh air. Forget your trouble.
Yeah, but let me...
Now, look at that crowd. How many people do you think there were at that game?
I'm sure I haven't the faintest idea.
Look again. How many people do you think there are in that photograph?
10,000.
Guess again.
20,000. Mr.
You're
Mayor.
Not even warm, Mr. Maxwell.
Well... Oh. You mean it's more like 40,000?
It's more like it. But that ain't it.
Mr. Mayor, about that flaw you mentioned.
There's no flaw in that photograph, Mr. Maxwell. It's perfect. What was your last guess?
50,000.
There were 75,000 people in that stadium. Ain't that wonderful? 75,000 filling their lungs with nature's own sunshine. I'll send the guy up to see. Goodbye.
It's black and white. It was made by Preston Sturges in the 40s, so... There's no explosions, no boobs.
Are there superheroes? Are there
no capes? no androgynous gods.
Sorry, we're not interested.
Wisecracking androgynous
is
gods.
Is Spider-Man involved somehow?
Yeah, I know. Come on, Spider-Man. But it tells us all about what you need to know to decipher Joe Biden's latest ravings. It talks about counting the votes, and it's set in Chicago, The Great McGinty, set in Chicago. It's about a stew bum, what we used to call stew bums. Now we call them homeless people, who gets involved in politics by voting repeatedly. he's given a list of polling places and gets paid for voting. And he handles it, and he rises up the ranks. So I just wanted to ask all of you, what do you make of the president's latest ranting?
Which one? Now, listen, his speech in Georgia this week was unbelievably divisive. I mean, it was way over the top in terms of the rhetoric that he used, you know, comparing, January 6th to the bombing, you know, of the church in Birmingham and Bloody Sunday and all of these voting laws and basically saying, if you're not in favor of this, you are standing with or the equivalent of, you know, Jefferson Davis and Bull Connor and George Wallace. I mean,
you're an enemy of the people, enemy of the state.
He actually said, yes, domestic enemies. He said he will protect the country, his oath, from, you know, enemies foreign and, yes, domestic. And that, you know, first of all, I think it backfired. I think it was just so over the top that Democrats are having a hard time convincing people that voting in 2022 is the same or worse than it was in 1965. That is not, that's just not the people, average person recognizes that as just a blatant untruth. Right. So they're having trouble selling this. And, but it's not even really, this is what's confounding to me. Aside from the fact that it breaks his promise that he was going to be a president for everybody, unite the country, all that, you know, blah, blah, blah. But like, what's the strategy here? I mean, he knows, and it was reiterated yesterday on the floor of the Senate with Kyrsten Sinema that he doesn't have the votes.
Right.
He does not have the votes. So he is literally, you know, I tweeted a GIF or a GIF, depending on how you pronounce it, the other day. I mean, he and Chuck Schumer are like Thelma and Louise, like putting the pedal to the metal going over the cliff. I mean, they know it's coming, but they don't care. And so it's, and if the strategy is to rile up the base of the party, African-Americans, progressive whites, you know, and say, I'm going to fight this fight, blah, 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 it's going to end in disappointment. And so it's not going to go any, it's going to do damage to the party. It may energize the base in the short term, but it's not going to do it in the long term. And it has real risks, as we're already seeing, of alienating moderates, independents, people who are, you know, look at this stuff and think, you know, this is crazy. The idea that, you know, it's impossible for minority voters to vote or to have an ID or show an ID. I mean, it's just, I don't understand, what the Democrats are doing, and they're doing it all. And this is the topper. And this is why it's politically, I think, stupid, is that they're doing it in a time where voting rights is not anywhere on the list of concerns for Americans. It's inflation, it's COVID, it's crime, it's right. education, it's immigration. It's all of these issues, and they're not addressing any of them.
When you're in trouble, If you're a Democrat and you're in trouble, isn't that the time to burn a church and blame somebody? Right? They burned the church. They burned the black church, right? And isn't this the same guy who, and I remember because I covered it, and you did too, who said in the voice of Foghorn Leghorn, the president of the United States currently, said to NAACP attendees at a conference that Romney was going to put y'all back in chains. Isn't this the same man? So let's see. He is he's lunch bucket Joe when he needs to be. He's segregationist Joe when he wants to cozy up to Talmadge and Wallace. He's independent Joe when that comes up.
He's also demagogue Joe. When right. He wants so to be.
Is he not our truest American president in that he becomes whatever you want him to be, what he thinks he needs at the time.
Yeah. But perhaps,
well, that's an indictment on us, right? Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's also not a strategy for long-term success. And when you promise all things to all people, you will invariably disappoint. And the main promises that he made when he campaigned, for president was that he was going to shut down the virus, not the economy, and that he was going to, you know, bring people together and unite the country. I mean, go back and read his inaugural address. I mean, it's only been a year. It's been 1 year and look at where we are. I mean, he has at every turn, he has chosen the more divisive path, the more confrontational path. He has chosen vaccine mandates. He has chosen, instead of working with red state governors to confront them and attack them, he has chosen, to placate the left wing of his base almost every single time. And that has led him into, going back to car analogies, and I said this on Fox the other day. I mean, he's driving around in, you know, the cul-de-sac of a dead end street. He's nowhere to go. There's no There's no plan B. There's no alternate policy. He's lost the trust of the American people. He certainly hasn't made true on promises to work with the Republicans. So he's kind of sitting there just going around in circles. And it's hard to see how the administration works itself out of this. I mean, they really need to do they really need to hit the stop button and take a deep breath and reset and you know, reorient themselves toward the concerns of the American people, because they are off on a tangent now that is going to end in you know, a bloodbath in November if they keep it up.
And you nailed it. I mean, I feel like the Biden needs a dump. Anybody who is attached to his campaign and maybe working in the White House now needs to go, because he spent the entire campaign only doing one thing, saying, "I'm not Trump." And then there was no policy plans. I mean, they put stuff out, but it was all stuff to appease the fringes or this group and that group and this group. And all those groups are coming back to cash their checks, and he's got nothing. And our folks at News Nation, Next Star Side, they did a polling on this just this week. And before the speech, and he was running around like 47% approval rate, which is, I can't.
That's good.
Yeah, that's like, you should be happy about that, because yeah. I'm amazed that that's high.
I mean, numbers are like 33, right?
The new Quinnipiac numbers are 33 with adults and 35 with registered voters, which is pretty miserable. But listen, you know, and you guys probably heard this, and I saw a clip of Tucker making fun of it last night. But there have been voices in the administration, and so Kamala Harris sat down with Craig Melvin of NBC, and he asked her. He said, "Listen, clearly what you're doing on COVID is not working, and you had this, you know, these six people who wrote this letter urging you to change course. Is it time to change strategy on COVID?" And she said, quote, "It is time for us to do what we have been doing. And that time is every day. Every day it is time for us to agree that there are things and tools that are available to us to slow this thing down." I mean, so there's no,
I feel like it's a poster in a head shop in the 70s next to the Jonathan Livingston Seagull books.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. And so there doesn't seem to be any interest in changing course. I mean, honestly, if I was advising the White House, I'd say, listen, I know they put together a task force for this on the supply chain, but I would like, you know, part of this is you can argue, okay, how much control does Joe Biden really have over inflation? And you could say, well, his policies are impacting it, you know, 10%, 20%, 100%, whatever. But part of this is just responding to it is the most important issue by far for Americans right now. They're all concerned about it because they feel it in their lives every day. And the Biden administration isn't really doing anything. I would name an inflation czar. I would put together a task force to tackle inflation. I would talk about it, you know, and say, this is all we're working on. We're not working on anything else. We're working on inflation and we're working on COVID, and we're going to change our COVID strategy, and we're going to do away with, you know, our mandate was struck down at the Supreme Court. Fine. That's great. We're going to abide by that. And we're going to kind of, you know, shift gears on COVID. That's the only strategy to me that's going to help them recover from where Biden currently is, which is, as you mentioned, 33% in that Quinnipiac poll. He's about 41.5, 42 in our Real Clear Politics average, to get him back to where he needs to be for the Democratic Party not to get wiped out in the midterms. We have a piece this morning by Sean Trendy, and Sean's done this. He has this model that he uses to forecast election results, and it's been really, really accurate. And it's basically comes down to presidential job approval. It is the single most important metric for determining outcomes of elections, is particularly midterms. Is, you know, if you think the president's doing a good job, you're going to vote for his party. If you don't, you're not. And
the title of it is "What Biden's Approval Rating Means for the Midterms."
Yeah, and
Real Clear Politics.
And so if the election were held today, based on where he is in our Real Clear Politics average at 42%, the Democrats would have a 0% chance of keeping the Senate. And the most likely outcome would be they'd lose four seats. So that's like, you know, they'd lose Arizona, they'd lose Nevada, they would lose Georgia, and then they'd lose maybe New Hampshire. So, you know, he has to get back to about 48% job approval rating to make it a coin toss. He has to get to 49%. Their odds go up to 76%. If he can get to 50%, the odds of Democrats keeping the Senate go up to 91%, according to Sean. And again, there's a range of outcomes there. It's like, you know, Republicans could pick up two seats or Democrats could pick up two seats. The most likely outcome in that scenario would be zero, no change, which means Democrats would keep control. So they've got to recover ground. They have to, and it's incumbent upon Joe Biden to do it, and he's not doing it. In fact, he's put his party in a position where they're just going to suffer more. I mean, this what happened yesterday when he went up to went up to Capitol Hill and sat down with Democrats and tried to talk them into this voting rights stuff. And, you know, Kyrsten Sinema gets up and is like, I'm not doing it. It's embarrassing and it's depressing for Democrats to watch their party squabble over these things.
Who's the president? I'm sorry. Go on, Jeff.
No, I said, Tom, and you nailed it earlier. I mean, it keeps ringing in my head that, you know, none of the things that he's focused on or talking about are of top of mind to anyone. And I can't tell you how many people, you know, in my family members or friends who are lifelong have never voted anything other than Democrat, and they are embarrassed by what they're dealing with in their everyday life because they can't believe inflation's up and gas prices are up and all this stuff. But they're embarrassed that this is the guy that they had to choose, and because he's not listening to anything other than the people that he promised all this crap to, that he's never going to get done. And it shows that progressives only see one thing as progress above all, which is not how it works. You progress when you can, but come on, what the hell?
Well, I think the progressives have really won. They haven't lost. They might lose. They'll lose this election, but in the long term, the hard left seems to have won. They didn't stop with the deconstruction of statues. They've been seriously and relentlessly deconstructing authority, deconstructing tradition. I don't see it coming back.
Well, I think there's...
So I'll just go out and shoot myself now in the woods.
I think there's two things. One is that, you know, this isn't rocket science. The American public has put out there the roadmap for success for this administration. They, you know, their priorities are clear. And you could say, well, you know, you shouldn't listen to polls, you should have your convictions. That's fine. But your priorities should align with the priorities of the American people. And if they don't, you're going to pay a political price for that. And I think the problem for Joe Biden is he has talked himself in to this idea that it is incumbent upon him and his party to save the republic, save democracy, right? He's going to restore the soul of the nation.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the first part of that was beating Trump. Okay, he did that. The second part of that, though, is like this, you know, January 6th, and Trumpism is not dead, and it needs to be killed. And the only way to kill it is to kill off, you know, any of these election bills that are being passed or considered in any of these Republican states. Forget about the Democratic states like Delaware, where they have fewer, you know, early voting days than Georgia, or forget about New York, where they don't allow ballot harvesting or any of these things. Only in Republican states do we need to stomp this stuff out because the Republic is in, you know, mortal danger. He believes that, I think. And that's the problem, is that he's now put that as his top priority. But the problem is it's not the country's priority. And so suddenly he looks way, way out of touch.
You have published many interesting reference pieces along with all the other stuff you put out in Real Clear Politics, Tom. One was the, just to come to mind, one was the TikTok and comparison between January 6th and the summer of the riots, of the Black Lives Matter riots. And I'm wondering, is there anything you could refer the audience to on Real Clear where people could go and see, okay, in Delaware, they do this, you know, in Biden's state, in Georgia, they do this. Is there any like good
That's a great question. We don't have anything like that, but I'm sure it exists out there. We just have to find it. I'm sure there are websites that can tell you what the voting laws and procedures are in every single state. And obviously they vary from state to, and that's part of the problem with I forgot to mention that. I mean, that's the other piece of you know, this crusade by Joe Biden that's going to end in misery. Is like, even if they did get somehow get Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin to go along with this and nuke the Senate filibuster, legislative filibuster to pass these laws, they would be immediately challenged on constitutionality. I mean, this the Constitution delegates to the states. Yeah, that, it's very clear in this regard. So I'm not sure, you know, how much of these laws would survive legal challenges. And and that would be, you know, again, we'd go through all of that and it would end in misery. So
I just can't believe we have
to change course and do something that, you know, I think would help the country and aligns with the priorities of the American people and would survive, you know, any legal challenges.
Agreed. And, you know, this country is so racist. And the voting laws are so racist that we elected a black man from Chicago twice in a row. You know, I mean, I don't understand how they can even make the argument, except if it's just to placate the screamers on the left. And that's what they've done.
I've been tweeted the last couple of days. The stuff that's being, and I don't watch a lot of cable TV. I don't really watch Fox. I'm on Fox, but I, you know, I don't have it on in the office, you know. And I definitely don't watch, you know, CNN or MSNBC, but, you know, our video guys are compiling clips from all these networks and from the, you know, Senate floor and all this stuff. So I'll get up in the morning and I'll go through and I'll look at the clips. And, you know, the clips are obviously, they're chosen because they're the most sensational or whatever.
Well, they're
the most newsworthy and and all that. But the stuff that's coming out of MSNBC right now that you see on that network is out of control. It's like a loony bin of haters over there. I mean, whether they're talking about how, you know, racist everybody is, everybody who doesn't agree with them.
The Republican Party is a terrorist movement.
Yes, and that was last night. I mean, Nicole Wallace had this guy on, Jason Johnson, who's an MSNBC contributor, and says, I don't even call it the Republican Party anymore because they're a dime store front for a terrorist organization, the equivalent of, like, you know, Hamas to the PLO or Sinn Féin to the IRA. I mean, it's like this kind of stuff is so over the top. I suppose it appeals to a tiny, tiny sliver of the furthest left people out there. Oh,
I don't know. I don't know. I think it appeals. It appeals to all my trolls of the left. It appeals to a former editor of mine who now is influencing young journalists at Northwestern. And
you gonna name names or what?
No, I'm not going to name his name.
I think that was specific enough.
He's not worth naming, but. But every to him, every Republican is a fascist. Every Republican is a terrorist. It is, and I don't know how you can have reasonable people can have discussions this way. You can't. Well,
no, listen, and to be fair, you know, you go on Fox, and there are some folks on Fox who you know, will say every Democrat's like a, you know, a complete Marxist socialist wants to destroy the country. And that's
not all.
No, most. I agree. Yeah. I mean, I think, but that does get said. And so those are the sort of two extremes. And again, that's not where the country is. And so to the extent the Democratic Party is consumed with that as their central message, right? It's like saying, you know, it's the deplorables sort of writ large, right?
Right.
It is not going to end well for them, because I think average Americans are not buying it. And we saw that in Virginia and New Jersey, and we're going to see it again in November, unless they change course. And I don't know how they're going to do that. I keep waiting for Biden to have his sister soldier moment with the Democratic Party.
Oh, no.
But there is none.
You know, it's like, and this is a question for both of you. This is like when they go so far, Democrats are going so far now to, and from the president on down, to compare all their, if you disagree with me, you're a Confederate, you're a racist, you're an enemy of the, you're a domestic terrorist. When they go that far, what is the response? Ultimately, isn't it just get out the tomahawks? And that's what worries me about the future of the Republic, because the response from the Republicans will be in a similar vein now to these Democratic rants.
And yeah, that I mean, worries me. I'm worried about that too. I mean, it's sort of the, you know, whatever physics law it is, you know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Right. And we've been trapped in that cycle for a long time where it's a tit for tat and one party will do something. The next party takes power. They do something equivalent or worse and keeps escalating. And Kevin McCarthy's already sort of telegraphed that if they win the House, he's going to, you know, strip Democrats of committee assignments, et cetera, et cetera. But back to, you know, we have a piece on Real Clear Politics this morning, and it's a Twitter thread by this woman. And it is, you know, we've run a couple of these kinds of stories over there. Was one in The Atlantic a couple of weeks ago. There was one in Politico. These are Democrats who have been basically red-pilled over, you know, the school closings and education.
Wait, I've seen it. I didn't open it. It says from Twitter or something rather than, you know, the New York Times or the Spectator.
Yeah. So she says, if you told lifelong Dems in 2019 that by 2022 they become single issue voters for the other side, they would have said you're nuts. and she says, and yet here we are. Did you question blue state COVID policy? Poof, you're now a Republican. Wanted your kids in school? Welcome to the other side. Said Florida wasn't doing so bad and maybe we could lighten up a bit. Start putting up that DeSantis 2024 yard sign. They called you an unhinged granny killer faster than you could say, let it rip. But even after they cast you aside and told you to grab your gun and flee the coast with your fellow Rush Limbaugh loving comrades, you weren't ready to privatize healthcare and head to the ballots. And it goes on and on.
It is really good.
It is really good, but it,
Elizabeth Steinberg.
Yeah. So, yeah. But this is the other piece of that is, you know, not being focused on economic issues and being more focused on cultural issues and wokeness and equity and all these buzzwords of the left,
right,
and seeing that play out in schools and, you know, NCAA pools and, you know, other things.
Right.
That is also driving people away from the Democratic Party. And, you know, Bernie Sanders is like talking about it's driving away working class people, in particular, working class men of all races. Right.
Right.
I mean, well, Hispanic men, African-American men, you know, this is a real problem for the Democratic Party. And they got to get a handle on it before they, you know, there was a. After Barack Obama was elected, you remember when said, the Republican Party's dead. It's now a rump party. It's like Southern whites and
stupid.
Yeah, it's a regional party now. It's not a national party anymore. Right. Democrats are on, you know, and that turned out not to be true, obviously. But Democrats are sort of headed in that direction. They are shrinking their party day by day to the point where they won't be able to win elections in some of these competitive states. Unless they change course, or Donald Trump's maybe on the ballot, that might be the other thing that allows them to unify to the point where they could win an election. But right now, it's looking fairly grim.
You know, I was thinking of a possible column, which would be how could Trump truly drive the Democrats insane by endorsing Ron DeSantis for president?
Seriously, I mean, talk about it's bulletproof then, right? I mean,
who knows, but I know there are a lot of Trump people who respect him and want him to run because they feel that they want to have that visceral feeling of seeing their opponents kicked in their special purpose. You know, that's what they want. And I can't blame them after what has happened over the past year, particularly what you start with unity and you end up burning witches. I don't think that's.
Yeah. Trump's going to be the Don King of this election, right? He's going to be, you know, running around with the unique hair, hyping up DeSantis. I mean, that would seem like a steamroller to me. But John, to your point too, about the idea of the tomahawks and people kind of going crazy. I mean, it's totally just a one-off analogy, but I was, anecdote, I was talking to one of the guys at work, and we've been talking about this throughout the pandemic that like people who are driving, and I know it sounds crazy, maybe I'm nuts, but are super aggressive now and like rude. And you know, if someone sits at a light for less than a second and they honk and even in public in like a grocery store, people cut you off. I feel like there's this, you know, that scene in Ghostbusters when everyone starts getting angry and mad and the city is like all mad and all of a sudden then it drives the ghost to go crazy. I feel like we're living in a time where everybody is so quick to jump at everybody else and be mad. And this stuff is no one's reading the room, especially the Democrats, because they're seeing all the stuff that is making everybody crazy and not looking at the things that are really impacting people. And it's just, I don't know how we fix it, but it's certainly not good for the health of the Republic. But I wanted to ask you both, especially Tom, since we got you, I wanted to ask you there about the RNC and the debate threat about trying to change the presidential debates, because I'm curious to see what you guys think about that move or what you think about the debates in general, because I know we people who follow this stuff all the time see the debates as kind of a dog and pony show at times. But I don't know. I feel like not most Americans, but I'm sure many Americans only get introduced to presidents in those debate moments because just the way the world works, you know, they don't see, they're not following it like a lot of other people are. So I'd love to get your guys' take on that.
Tom?
It strikes me as if it was a sort of preemptive shot across the bow saying, listen, you know, we're not going to, we're threatening to take our ball and go home if, and I think it might primarily be about the moderators because Republicans are always, you know,
with reason.
And so, you know, they have done some of that with the primary debates, right? It's like, why is Chuck Todd moderating a Republican primary debate when he's just, or George Stephanopoulos or whatever.
Right.
But to have that in the commission debates is something different. So I think I agree with you. It would be stupid to pull out of the debates. I mean, that is the showcase. That is where a lot of people, even though their ratings have been going down for years and years and less people are watching it now than did, you know, 20 years ago. It's still a pretty big platform and it's a chance for voters to see the candidates go one-on-one on various issues. And so I think it would be dumb to not participate. But so that's why I think this is just a tactical shot across the bow.
Agreed. It would be dumb not to participate. But right now, the debate groups, I mean, the commission can say, well, do you want a conservative? Here's Chris Wallace. And then all the Republicans groan. So why not? I'd like it to end up as a true debate format.
I thought you were going to say a UFC cage match.
Or a grill off. Maybe
mud wrestling.
I only go for oil wrestling. But I'd like to see a real debate, like be it resolved. If you disagree with Biden, are you therefore a domestic terrorist or something like that? And let them go at it with a moderator, but not ask the moderator not asking questions, just keeping them in line. And their microphones shut off after, you know, the allotted time. So they could wave their hands angrily, but they would be out of commission for sound. Why not that? What about that, guys?
Hey, I'm all for it. Good debate.
Yeah.
Tom's just being polite.
No. I mean, it would be nice to actually have. It would be nice to have a more traditional debate where issues were raised and talked about, as opposed to, right. You know, so often now the moderators, they're choosing the questions and you know, asking some silly questions that don't, you know, tend to favor one party over another, or tend to follow like the news of the day, or tend, you know, it's just like there could be a lot that could be done to improve the debate process
and the journalistic preening. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that has to go, you know.
Yep.
Get some old broken down city hall writers in there to ask the questions.
That's what you need.
Yeah, baby.
And in time of Newton's third law is.
Newton's third law.
Action is opposite.
That's right. I got to remember that. Newton's third law.
You know, Jeff is Mr. Physics, according to this podcast.
That's the plan.
Well, so what's new? What's coming up for Tom Bevin and Real Clear? Give us a look.
We are doing some election analysis. We've been doing some poll analysis. We just put up our Senate map this week. And so we're going to be sort of rolling out more and more election related stuff here in the coming days, because it is now an election year, which is, you know, I love election years because there's actually something to cover other than the, you know, day in, day out slog of culture war, which is what it comes down to. So this is going to be a good year in terms of, for us and for, I think, coverage.
Well, all politics is local as far as I'm concerned. And the one local issue that could affect suburban voters throughout the country and city voters is the increase in violent crime and the, you know, the Soros prosecutors, the woke prosecutors. Now, that helped launch an issue at the paper and help launch my new career at John Cass News. But how do you think it'll play for those down ballot elections that could drive turnout in the congressional elections?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it certainly is the case that I think folks in suburbs, and I live in the suburbs, so I'm speaking from experience. You know, we feel when you read about the carjackings that are happening on the, you know, north side. I mean, they're happening on the North Shore. They're
the shootout at Oak Brook, right?
Yeah, we had the, you know, Old Orchard Mall is just down the road from us, and the Nordstrom there got jacked. You know, people went in, and now they've got cops out front. I mean, so we're seeing this stuff and we're paying attention to it. And we've got kids that, you know, got a college age kid and a couple of them. And, you know, they want to go downtown with their friends to dinner or something. I'm like,
how about lunch? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Right. And how about you, you know, stay north of,
right.
I don't know. Foster. Yeah. So we're feeling it. I think other suburban parents and families are feeling it. And the education issue is another one that we're feeling very acutely on, you know, school closures and COVID craziness and all that stuff. So I think both those issues will be a factor in terms of the election and down ballot races. I don't honestly, though, John, I saw your column today where you posited, you know, Ken Griffin needs to swoop in and fund challenges to the mayor and the governor and, you know, basically try and reconfigure the state. As much as I think some people, myself included, think a change of leadership would be great. Do you think it's really going to happen? Do you think voters... Or is the system so ingrained, so just immovable that an independent or Republican or even a Democrat who's more of like a centrist Democrat, like Paul Vallis, as you mentioned, right, could win an election?
Well, I wrote
even with it, the backing,
I wrote it for to get people talking and thinking, the Ken Griffin hat trick, because he has $28 billion, and so all we're talking about is his pocket change. Really, he wants to get involved. Okay, mm-hmm. Yes, I understand the argument. You know, what's the difference between Soros and Ken Griffin then, you know, except their politics? I understand all that. But here's the truth. Chicago and Illinois are at a tipping point. They're seriously at a tipping point. Everybody I know wants to leave the state. And I don't know who wants to stay in the city if you can't get your kids to school. So something has to happen. And do people care about crime? Yes, they do.
Yes, they do.
Unfortunately, I'm not the editor of either of the major metropolitan dailies. So I can't direct political writers to focus on why is Toni Preckwinkle getting a pass when she's involved in the most critical issue, crime, and she controls the budgets of Tim Evans, the chief judge, Kim Fox, the prosecutor, and Tom Dart, the sheriff, whose jail she has been pushing to reduce in population by, what, 70%?
Yep.
So all that, I do think it's, I don't know what'll happen. I just wanted people to start talking about it.
Well, that's a tough road for a Republican to the primary is going to be a gauntlet no matter who they are because of just the way the nature of things are. My dad keeps asking me about this same thing, and he doesn't vote Republican. So
yeah,
it's certainly top of mind is who's going to come up and be able to talk about the violence thing too, because that's another thing. My dad, you know, a suburban guy, lived in the city as a kid, but moved out to the burbs, and he thinks, you know, he says the violence is the biggest issue in the city, and he hasn't been into the city in quite a while.
Let me diverge for 1 second. I know we've got to wrap this up at some point, but here's a question for you, John and Jeff. Yes. So Andrew Cuomo undercounted nursing home deaths and covered it up. We now learn that Gretchen Whitmer has been accused of undercounting nursing home deaths to the tune of like 40%. What are the odds that J.B. Pritzker was the only blue state governor who played it absolutely by the book and told us exactly what happened in nursing homes in Illinois?
My mom's in a nursing home in Illinois, and I don't think the odds are good for J.B. Yeah. Pritzker. But, you know, I didn't think anybody who took out the toilets in a neighbor's house to get a property tax break could ever be elected governor. But here we go with Commodius Maximus. He's in Springfield.
Where's the Enterprise reporting on that question? Someone doing it?
There is. Look, as the rise of the Real Clear Politics empire, which takes aggregates from various points of view, and I keep pointing this out in my column and any chance I get. And now with you, you have people on the left and the right and the center all the time, all these competing views. It's not like some woke newsroom. You have people on the left, the right, and the center commenting all the time. But that said, the newspapers themselves, when they go woke and they go small, where's the staff to do the kind of enterprise reporting you're talking about? And I want urgency. If I was a city editor, I'd probably have 7 heart attacks now because I don't want to hear, hey, you know what, boss, we have to go to the Starbucks, get a macchiato and we'll talk about it. And maybe we'll meet tomorrow. No, you bleepers. I want that story in the paper now, yesterday, you know, and it's not.
I'm going to put a bow on this by saying, John, have you seen Spider-Man? Have you seen those movies?
No.
Well, you got to watch them because you're J.K. Simmons.
Oh, really? Is that the editor? I thought I was pairing
the editor of the Daily Bugle. Just We don't need to say anything more. You just need to, you know, you can even just watch a few clips and you'll know.
Well, what is my line? Do I have a signature line? Wait, who's that played by the insurance?
J.K. Simmons. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Also from Tremé, or not Tremé, whatever that piano movie was. Yeah. Whiplash. Or
this drummer movie.
Yeah.
The drummer movie wasn't the same as the alternate reality East German spy movie.
Right.
Which was a great series, but it died. And
he's a great actor. But go watch some clips of J.K. Simmons in Spider-Man.
All right. Get me that, Bevan. In the meantime, I want that column for Johncast News tomorrow.
There we go.
Tom Bevan, thanks so much for being here.
Always great to be with you guys.
Always. Thanks, buddy.
Yep.
For Tom Bevan, co-founder of Real Clear Politics, and its president, who is now casting me in another hard-bitten role of the crusty but benign city editor. Thanks, Tom. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist at johncassnews.com. Contact me at john@johncassnews.com if you want to advertise on this podcast. I'm sure there's got to be some meat producers out there. Like, I'm just thinking of one that makes sausage on the north side, one that has great beef in the western suburbs. I'm just thinking. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.